Back together again, you and I chatting it up Wednesday, September 11th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. We featured local and national expert analysis of the previous night's presidential debate. We welcomed Southern Connecticut State University political science professor Dr. Tess Marchand Shapiro, CBS News correspondent Linda Kenyon, Sacred Heart University poli sci professor and scholar in residence Dr. Gary Rose, and Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar. He watched the debate with some area college students. And in our hyper-elevated, hyper-sensitive world of politics these days, on shows like this and all over the state, the country, and different TV channels, you know, I say this, you know, in dead seriousness. I'm serious when I say this, and I do say it kind of tongue-in-cheek. But in the end, nobody gets out of here alive. We're all going to pass away. We're all going to die. And at our ultimate judgment, it's not going to matter whether we're a Democrat or Republican or independent or communist or socialist or whatever. And it's good to see that today at ground zero, as we remember 23 years since September 11th, all standing together in a picture I'm looking at, Chuck Schumer, Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, and former New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg. So, again, there are some things, especially on today, on a day like today, they're a little bigger than petty politics. Speaking of Mr. Bloomberg, could New York City use him now? All right, first of our experts today giving us their opinion as to what went down last night, good, bad, or otherwise. We've had her on before. Southern Connecticut State University political science professor Dr. Tess Marchand Shapiro joins us. Professor, it's Paul again at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Paul?
I'm good. Doing very well. Well, give us your broad view on what happened last night. What did America watch last night?
Well, I think it was a much better experience than July. What do you think?
I mean, absolutely. And, you know, the July performance, unfortunately, by Mr. Biden, who was not at his best last night. We're all getting old. You know, I think that pretty much, you know, handed the win by default to Mr. Trump in July. But boy, last night was pretty, was almost the polar opposite, I think. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I guess you, last time you asked me who I thought I'd won last night, I actually think that it was moderators that won. I think they did a really nice job of keeping the conversation going, keeping people on track, following through and catching things that needed to be caught. So I think the moderators won, although in terms of, I suppose I agree with everybody that Kamala probably did a better job of speaking articulately and talking about the issues than Trump did last night.
Yeah. Do you think at this point of a campaign, you know, we usually say in the past campaigns, these things don't really make a difference. There's three of them. Well, we don't have three. We may not have more than one this year. But do you buy, Professor, the notion that this year might be different for undecided voters or maybe not?
Yeah. I mean, that was the question I ended last night with, is would last night actually have been enough for undecided voters to make up their minds? I was thinking about the questions that got asked, and they were asking the questions, structuring them really well, that people have been talking about in connection to the debate. But after it was all done, I started wondering, did they actually talk about the issues in the way that a normal presidential election, they talk about issues? In the past, if they'd known there was going to be just one debate, you know, the first half of the debate would have been devoted to domestic policy, the second half foreign policy, and they would have gone through the economy and education and so forth. And I was trying to think, there really weren't a lot of those normal policy questions that got asked,
you know,
which makes it hard for an independent voter to make up their mind.
Yeah, one of my previous callers, in fact, a professor, mentioned that very thing a few minutes ago, that because these things tend to be so structured, and then this year, because we may not get more than one, you're right. And he said the same thing. You know, in years past, I remember, okay, tonight's debate is on foreign policy. In 3 weeks, we'll talk about domestic policy. And you're right, I think that's really a disservice to people who are not looking at these things, Professor, like an infomercial, like the conventions have become. Like, tell us something that's going to tell us something that's going to make us go, ah, wow, I never heard him or her say that, right?
Right, right. I mean, one of the takeaways is Trump saying, yes, I you know, pretty much affirming that he still thinks that he won the race.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one of the, I don't know. What would be the takeaway? Oh, not being willing to say that he would veto an abortion ban.
Yeah.
I'm going back and forth on the fracking thing.
Mm-hmm.
And was it very helpful on the fracking ban? It was sort of a he said, she said on that.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think, Professor, that the position that Vice President Harris has taken vis-a-vis her relationship and involvement with Biden policy, she's trying to walk a fine line here, saying when she said a few weeks ago, yeah, my values haven't changed, but still, you know, there are some who say, well, you got to kind of put a little space between you and Joe Biden, an older Democrat. Is she achieving that, or do you think she still has some work to do there?
Well, I mean, it was a good one-liner that you're not running against Joe Biden, you're running against me. That was a great line.
Yeah.
But in terms of the space, she hasn't really had a chance. Normally, a candidate would have a year to figure out how to walk that line, and she's had a month. Or I guess 2 months. No, just 1 month, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And so that's sort of hard to do. But then the questions of, well, why haven't you done this before? It's like, she's just the vice president. How could she have implemented her policy? The vice presidents don't do that. The one thing I thought was interesting, actually, mm-hmm. was the examples that she used about her involvement in foreign policy and talking about going to Latin American countries and having conversations about the issues leading to migration,
mm-hmm.
Talking about the meeting with Zelensky right before the invasion. And I remember the first couple of years of the Biden administration, Biden saying, Harris is going to be in charge of this. And then a few weeks later, she's going to be in charge of this. And it's like she was getting assigned all of these really intractable
yes.
problems. There's no way she can solve.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, Professor, you're right. That brings back what on this show I said, really, you're going to have her connected to the border? I mean, you know, I felt bad for her because, like, here's an issue we haven't solved in 40 or 50 years, you know?
Right. But last night it sort of all came together of, because of those assignments, she was out there meeting with the world leaders. And I hadn't ever thought about that until last night.
Yeah, maybe it was set up that way. Thank you, Southern Connecticut State University poli sci professor Dr. Tess Marchant Shapiro. And, Professor, thank you. We'll be chatting undoubtedly before Election Day once again. Appreciate it. Thanks.
You betcha. Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye. And back here on today's edition of Connecticut Today with you every Monday through Friday from 2 to 6. And we continue our debate analysis last night. And joining us, CBS News reporter Linda Kenyon to give us her input on what she thought of last night. Hey, Linda, it's Paul. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. All is well. It was a very, how shall we say, interesting debate.
Yeah, I guess so. And it looked like, Linda, from all the post-debate reacts that you and I and everyone else has read, it looks like Vice President Harris had a plan, Linda, to maybe, you know, get under Mr. Trump's skin. It sure looked that way.
Well, she certainly did get under his skin. And I think that one of the turning points for him was when she mentioned his rallies. You know, the former president has been very focused on crowd size, and he did not really appreciate when she said, I'm going to do something unusual here. I'm going to ask people to go to a Trump rally and see all the half-truths or mistruths, all of the strange things he says, like references to Hannibal Lecter, and see, she said, people walking out of the rallies because they're either exhausted or they're bored. And And so Trump was like, nobody walks out of my rallies. I have the biggest crowd size at rallies in the history of politics. And, you know, and then from there on, he just could not stomach that she had commented on his rallies. And he said, nobody goes to your rallies, that there's nobody there. And, you know, and of course, we know that is not true, mm-hmm. because we have the evidence that there are thousands of people who show up at these rallies. And I have been at both Trump and Harris rallies, and there are people at both.
Yeah, undoubtedly. But Linda, that tactic, though, they didn't let on about it at all. And, you know, millions of people tuning in wanted to hear, you know, the vice president's position on things, Mr. Trump's position on things. I wonder if some of them were pumping their fists in the air. Undoubtedly, they were. And I wonder how many of them maybe Linda didn't like the fact that this kind of got a little antsy between both of them for a lot of the debate.
Well, you know, I was kind of hoping that we would get some more meat and potatoes, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit more substance in terms of details. The vice president has discussed in some small detail what her economic plan is, including tax cuts for middle class. And Trump has talked about tariffs across the board. Harris has responded that that will just raise prices for middle class families. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't a lot of real substance in part and in fair because of the format being what it is. Neither candidate really had a whole lot of time to get into all of that kind of discussion with just 2 minutes to answer a question and then just about a minute or so on rebuttal. And, you know, the format in these situations doesn't really lend itself mm-hmm. to a whole lot of that. But by the same token, of course, I think that voters who were saying they don't know a lot about Kamala Harris wanted to know more about her policies and maybe came away saying, well, I still don't know a lot about her.
Yeah. And Linda, one thing that, you know, having been a reporter for so many years like you are now, you know, I've always wondered, this has been an ongoing theme on my show, will she do traditional news conferences? And coming off last night, where the vast majority of pundits say it was either a tie or she had a slight win, I wonder if she might in the final weeks feel the need or not to be more engaged with the press and do a, you know, an old fashioned freewheeling, what's your question news conference?
Well, I'm not familiar with a lot of vice presidents doing that, but presidential candidates, on the other mm-hmm. hand, more likely. However, this is a truncated campaign.
Yeah,
a lot of ground to cover. Battleground states are still very, very close. And so if she sits down for a news conference, I would imagine that it would have to be, say, on the campaign trail, not necessarily in Washington, D.C.,
yeah.
Because she's going to have to basically, you know, do two things at once. Will there be a news conference? Well, we certainly hope so. She's done only one sit-down interview, and that was with CNN and the CNN's Dana Bash, and that was done on the campaign trail. And CNN went to her instead of her coming to CNN because, sure. again, it's a truncated campaign situation and it's a pretty much a frenzied pace to the finish now.
And finally, Linda, do you think the Trump campaign accepts now the offer to do a second debate?
We know that the Harris campaign was very happy with Harris's performance last night and immediately said, let's have another debate. We know that former President Trump did something very unusual. He went right into the spin room and started talking, especially to Fox News. It's unusual for a candidate to go into the spin room and be interviewed by reporters yeah. or networks. Usually it's their surrogates who do that. So that may have been an issue that he felt he needed to clear up, that he maybe felt that he didn't do so well in the debate and he wanted to try and prop himself up for that in that respect. He has not responded to a question about whether he will accept another debate. I would be very surprised. He did not participate in debates during the primary season because he said, why would I do that? Mm-hmm. I'm already winning. You know, it's hard to argue with somebody with that view. However, if he feels he's not winning, does he want to put himself in a position again where he's going to be viewed as, you know, not winning again in a debate against Kamala Harris.
CBS News reporter Linda Kenyon joining us. Linda, thank you. We appreciate the time. Take care, and I'm sure we'll chat down the road. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
As we continue right here on WICC, another edition of Connecticut Today, and joining us right now, Sacred Heart University political science professor and a scholar in residence, Dr. Gary Rose, to add to the opinions we have today about the debate last night between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. Gary, good afternoon. Great to have you with us. How are you?
Yeah, good to be here, Paul. Good to hear from you.
Well, thank you, sir. And let's start out with that what they call that 30,000-foot view from on high before we zoom in here. Gary, what, in your opinion, did we see last night?
Well, I believe we saw a challenger to Donald Trump, presenting herself, even though she's vice president, she was presenting herself as really the challenger to an incumbent. That's really what I would say I saw. You know, Harris was treating Trump as really the incumbent president, and she was the challenger, which was interesting in light of the fact that she is currently the incumbent vice president. And so that was a very strategic move on her part. It shows also the preparation that she had, and she was obviously more prepared for this debate than he was. And so, but she was able to reverse the status of the two. That's really what I really took away from this. And I think a lot of people were watching this debate thinking, you know, wow, she is presenting, you know, the former president as one who is currently in power, and she is the one who is out of power trying to seek the Oval Office.
So she kind of used a political mirror, Gary, if I'm getting you right here, to shine Trump back on himself, because as you know, and as everybody knows, he served 4 years, but this is his third go-around, You say that they use that as a central theme here.
I think they did, yes. I think they really, you know, they were in the preparation, obviously, they said you have to come across as if Trump is in office and is responsible for some of the issues that are facing this country, despite the fact that he's not been president for close to 4 years. And so it was very strategic. It was planned well. I would say that the Harris team did a great job of preparing their candidate for this debate. And so objectively, and as a former debate coach, I have to say, objectively, she had more energy, more enthusiasm, and whether you consider her substance accurate, that's another matter. But nevertheless, she came across as, I think, a more prepared and skillful debater last night. And like I said, strategically, she was able to really reverse the status of the two candidates very effectively, I thought.
You know, Gary, in reading some of the summaries, even late last night, overnight into early this morning, there was kind of a string of everything I read, left-leaning, center-leaning, and right-leaning, something to the effect of Trump took the bait, or they baited Trump. They got him a little bit off his stilts there. You agree with that? You think that some of the stuff she brought up, they knew that they could get him angry?
Well, yeah, I agree with that. It was interesting, you know, the body language where he was looking straight ahead at all times.
Yeah.
Trying not to, and I think that was, intentional on his part, suggesting that he didn't really acknowledge her. That was probably not a good move on his part. She was looking at him throughout the entire time. And yeah, I think at times they got a little under his skin. He started to look, you know, perturbed, angry, but nothing like some people had predicted that she was able to do. So overall, I would say, despite that attempt to really get under his skin and to really aggravate him, I think he did a pretty good job of keeping his cool. There were times it was pretty clear that he was, not comfortable. But overall, I thought he maintained an element of composure that maybe surprised some people, including myself.
Dr. Gary Rose is the guest, one of our go-to guys for all things politics locally and nationally. Gary, the notion here that, you know, she may have won the debate or, you know, a draw even at best was better for her than Mr. Trump. How much do you think of a bounce she could get off of this? Or you think that people take these things for what they are and maybe this was or was not a decider for a lot of people?
Well, I can say that, you know, we're talking about probably over 90% of the voters are locked in already. And there is a very, very small percentage, you know, probably less than 10% that really are kind of on the fence right now and out there among maybe six swing states. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that for the most part, I do believe, and I've been waiting to watch, you know, post-debate polls here. I think she's going to get a slight bounce on this, but I don't think it's going to be really dramatic. Mm-hmm. And I'll be surprised if actually Trump gets a bounce, but maybe he will. There are people who felt that the moderators were, you know, doing a little fact-checking on mm-hmm. Trump when, in fact, they shouldn't have been fact-checking her also. Some have suggested there was a bias, but I'm not so sure about that. But nevertheless, I think that the debates probably aren't going to – this debate is probably not going to move the needle in a big way, maybe a small way. But if, in fact, it's against Trump and for Harris, Trump can definitely recover from not another debate, but perhaps his campaign ads, which I know are being run with a lot of regularity now, and they're pretty powerful too. So I don't believe this debate, I guess, to answer your question, is going to make or break the outcome of this election.
Gary, does Mr. Trump do another debate from a tactical point of view? You think he should or not?
If I was with the Trump campaign, I would say, I think you better do another one, because I know the Harris campaign wants another one because she did so well last
yeah.
night, which is kind of interesting, you know, because normally if you do real well, if you are perceived as a front runner, there's no need to debate. But if I was with the Trump campaign, I would say, you know, you didn't go all that well last night, and I think you got to do some more preparation, and I think you could come on much stronger and be more convincing in a second debate. So I would advise the Trump campaign to accept Harris's offer of a second debate and let's go with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Gary, final question. Do you think Ms. Harris, the VP, does she continue to shun traditional wide open back and forth news conferences here? She's done it so far. It hasn't really hurt her numbers. Maybe her younger voter base doesn't care about the D.C. press corps. What do you think she does there?
Yeah. Yeah. She seems to be, avoiding the press in a big way. Because she is only good in really organized type of forums, such as a debate or when she reads from teleprompters. And so right now I would say that that's strategic. If I was with that campaign, I would say there's no need to go with press conferences because that's not going to work to your advantage. She can't really think off script very well. And, you know, a debate is not off script by any means because you just have questions and you have prepared answers. But so I would advise her to, really follow, President Biden's game plan and not really a basement strategy, but there's no need right now for her strategically to meet with the press and to field a lot of questions. No, I don't think there is.
Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar in residence, as always, Dr. Gary Rose with some great feedback and analysis. Gary, as always, thank you. We appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Paul. Yep. Take care. Bye-bye.
Dan Harris is with us, Hearst Connecticut Media. And what a neat idea. Dan watched the debate last night. Dan, with what, college students? That's a great idea.
Southern Connecticut State University.
Nice.
Opened up the library. The library director there, Amy Beth,
okay,
had the foresight to say, let's make this into an educational event. And they had the college Democrats,
yeah.
College Republicans were invited. I don't know if there were any members, but I did talk to one or two
yeah.
actual Trump supporters who thought he did fine in the debate.
Yeah.
And the reaction was not what I expected. I expected it to be like a sports game, you know, with whooping and hollering,
yeah,
everybody
yeah.
cheering when somebody made a point, but that's not what happened. What happened was there was a lot of laughing
yeah.
at Trump.
Yeah.
And some laughing with Trump and some laughing at Trump because he is, as we all know, he is a funny guy. He has a good sense of comedic timing.
Yeah.
He was a little off the, excuse me, he was a little off the rails last night.
A little?
As I think you've been, I haven't been listening to the show these last couple of hours, but I'm sure that you agree that he was a little off the rails. And of course, the meme about eating dogs and cats is everywhere. But there was a lot of laughter, and there was some uncomfortable laughter, you know, when he would talk about Israel and when he would talk about babies.
Yeah.
You know, nobody is laughing about the issue of abortion.
Sure.
But and much less killing babies.
Yeah.
But, you know, for him to continue to say that in many places babies are being killed after they're born because of abortion, liberal abortion laws, is just, I don't see how that sort of thing is helpful to him at all. Nobody thinks it's true.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. Nobody who's an undecided voter thinks it's true.
Yeah. And Dan, I mean, look, Kamala Harris, clearly, and with all the rehearsal, I guess, here over the past few weeks, the strategy worked. They got under his skin, you know, with the stuff about the crowd size and what foreign leaders think of him. And yeah, I mean, if that's a boxing, if we can use a boxing metaphor, you know, she, you know, stick and jab and move. And I think that's what she pretty much did, at least to get him off his tempo.
She actually let him off the hook because she didn't say anything about, how do you pronounce
Orban?
Orban, the Central European, is he hungry?
Yes, yes.
The strongman, right? And, he's not exactly a paragon of the sort of, you know, American democratic ideal that we should be, you know, aspiring to here in this country.
Yeah.
And yet, he didn't just say it as an offhand reference. That was his number one testimonial is, oh, well, Orban thinks I'm a good guy.
Okay.
Right. Well, you know, and she kind of let him off the hook on that one. But I don't know what I've been saying today. And I didn't say in my column is that, you know, she's talking about wanting another debate.
Yeah.
And he's saying, oh, she only wants another debate because she lost.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think his own campaign manager thinks
no,
other than that she won the debate.
Yeah.
But it's my view is that she didn't just catch wind in the sails. It is a person that is and this is what Democrats have been saying all summer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fundamental personality trait where she precisely is the kryptonite for him, right? In a way that all of the people that he's faced so far have not been.
Yeah.
Obviously, Biden beat him in 20, but Biden didn't beat him in 20 by doing this. Biden beat him in 20 by building a coalition, right? And by Trump being absolutely stupid. All Donald Trump had to do in October of 2020 was agree to the $2,000 checks sent to every American making under 100,000 or 90 or whatever it was, that ultimately was sent in December of that year, right, as part of...
I remember,
I forget which tranche it was, but in any case, all he had to do was agree to that and he becomes president. So my point is that it's not just a matter of preparation. It is the fundamental nature of who she is that she's going to beat him in a debate.
Yeah. And Dan, in the 2 minutes we have left here, Governor Lamont, do you think the order came from him? And you follow this stuff really much better than I do. Did the order come from him to say, hey, hold on, I'm buying into this wind project because I'm getting yelled at and everybody else is because of the current electric deal? What do you think is up with suddenly the state, at least for the time being, not giving a firm go ahead to that wind co-op?
He's not saying, and I haven't worked it to get the inside story, but the key player here is Republican Senator Ryan Fazio from Greenwich, who is the Energy Committee ranking Republican.
Yeah.
And he's saying that the contracts are three times the base rate of power these days.
Yeah.
And, of course, the base rate of power is dropping while wind power is increasing. So that sounds outlandish, but it might not be incorrect. As you recall, the wind power imploded 2 years ago precisely because prices kept going up, and they weren't going to be able to meet those prices. So with Ryan Fazio and Steve Harding, the Senate Republican leader, saying, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. They're daring him to do it. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think he has the political, I mean, of course, he has the political capital. He can do whatever he wants. Right. Because he's a second term governor. But
he's the boss. Yeah.
yeah. But he it may not be wise for him to go ahead with it right now. But he loses either way right now because he's letting down Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and the developers of the offshore wind in Martha's Vineyard, which had an implicit agreement from Connecticut, if not explicit. So it's a no-win situation. The bottom line is, I'm going to do the numbers. Next time we talk, I may have the
numbers.
It's actually not that much money. The problem in our rates is not wind power. The problem in our rates is the nuclear deal and the other social stuff that's adding up, right? And so it's and also usage in June and July. That's the really big one, right? So the spike was not because of wind power. Right?
Oh, no.
Wind power is a few cents.
No.
Right. So, you know, do we want to halt the progress of the energy future of New England because of a few cents on the bill? That's going to be the policy issue. But we really have to look at the numbers.
Yeah. And that's going to be great. So, yeah, if you come back next week with those numbers, that would be great. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, thank you. Steer clear of the windmills. Don't eat any animals, as Mr. Trump said last night. And we'll chat next week.
I don't even have a walk-off line for that.
All right, Dan, take care.
You got it.
Bye-bye. No cats, no dogs, no nothing.